supposed to be hearing music right now. There we go. It's haunting and lyrical. Is it working? All right, are we on? Is this on? All right, here we go with another edition of After the Buzzer. Mike Gross and Gordy Jones. Gordy, how are you?
Outstanding. How are you, sir?
I'm well. I'm doing well. And our guest is doing really well. He is the coach of Lancaster Catholic High School girls basketball program, which exactly a week ago, won the Class 3A state championship. Overall record as a high school coach of 381-91, and over the last 10 years at Catholic, 255-35. He also was a great player at Columbia High School and at Franklin and Marshall College. And he's big, 6'9". Charlie Detz, welcome to After the Buzzer. Thanks for being with us, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, and thanks for the introduction.
There you go. It might have been a little too flowery. I apologize. it's as I said, exactly a week, and I remember you telling me a couple years ago that you're really, especially in season, it's pretty much all basketball all the time for you. So what's the few days after it's all over like? Are you crawling the walls, or are you relaxed and sort of ready to recharge? What's it like for you, Charlie, in the immediate aftermath?
Well, with winning a state championship, you get those couple of days of just taking a lot of calls, a lot of text messages, having a lot of interviews, and don't really get to soak it in. So it's been over the start of this week, like Monday, I would say it's starting to soak in that, hey, we accomplished a lot, but I'm not going to practice, so it's kind of an odd feeling there.
Yeah.
But now I'm getting back in the routine of not having basketball every night, and we won't take a lot of time off. We'll probably take the month of April off, and then get right back in it in May with open gyms that will prepare us for the summer league. So it's just like in season is 6 days a week. Out of season, it's still going to be 2 to 3 times a week, so not a lot of downtime anymore.
You had a group of seniors this year that this really was a culmination. To what extent were you aware, and to what extent do you think they were aware 4 years ago that this was possible and this was the track they were on and that this is the track they wanted to be on? They were all in on this project.
I can definitely say when they came here, they were all in. I mean, they knew what they wanted, and they were focused even then. Wanting it and going out and achieving it are two entirely different things, and there's a lot of hard work that goes into wanting it to getting it to achievement. And, when you come to Catholic, I don't necessarily think you think about state championships, but you do think about championships, whether it be section leagues or districts.
Sure.
So, when you come here, you have that expectation that, you're going to be playing into March every year. So they just kind of took that in stride and understood it, and you wanted to keep that tradition. When they came in, they were only 2 years removed from our previous state championship. So, right. It wasn't like, hey, it was 20 years ago since Catholic's last state championship. So I think when they came in, the thoughts were there, and the hope and dreams were there. And then, through a lot of hard work and a lot of practices and a lot of, they did stuff with me, but they also, such a dedicated class that, between AAU and personal trainers and stuff like that, they were doing a lot of stuff outside too. So that's the important thing that we talked about. I get them from November to March, and we try to make them into a team, but I have such a great group of girls, the senior class, but also when they come to Catholic, they kind of know it's a full year, commitment where they're going to be doing stuff on their own from April to October. So
right.
Their skills are improving. So when they come to me in November, they've put all that time in, and now they're ready to, kind of get into our stuff, kind of get into our defenses, our offenses, and things like that. So, you know, it's just has been, this group has been awesome. But again, it kind of is the standard bearer here at Catholic.
What are the little moments you treasure from this season?
I think the growth that I've seen with the girls and even seen with me and my staff. I mean, I think we've all, you know, it's one thing to come up short last year and feel like, yeah, hey, we're going to do it this year. But to keep coming back and working hard and getting better every day, and that was our ultimate goal. We didn't come in November and say, hey, we're going to win a state championship. We came in November and said, hey, November 17th when we start, November 18th, we're going to be better than we were the 17th. Mm-hmm. The 20th, we're going to be better than the 19th. And that was just our mantra the whole season. And, you know, just having them believe in that and then having the focus and the dedication and the work ethic to make it happen. They're not little things, but they're the things that, you know, you kind of add up at the end of the season, and they kind of distinguish us between us and other programs.
Was there ever any, like, moment where you said, okay, maybe we can do this, maybe we can, you know, take this the whole way, or do you never allow yourself to do that?
No, I do forward think there a little bit, and it's hard not to. Like I said, we were really rolling last year going into Dunmore. I mean, we beat Mount Carmel in the quarterfinals last year, and they were a super team. And I mean, it was 25 to 30 points and just suffocated them. And we just felt really good about that Dunmore game. And we came out and fell behind 12-0 and, you know, got it within one a few times in the fourth, but never got the lead. And we felt like we left that there. And, you know, just getting them to that point and then feeling the way they did in that locker room, and then with their dedication all through the off season and their hard work during the season, you know, I'm thinking around Christmas time we started really believing that, hey, you know, this is that special team, and we can do a lot of special things.
The thing that I hear about constantly, Charlie, is the difference between the whole boundary and non-boundary issue. And we're not going to debate that today, but I just wonder if your kids are aware of that, or your kids are aware of the perception that it's not a level playing field, no matter how you feel about that perception.
You know, I don't address it with them, so if they're doing it, they're hearing it on their own, or they're hearing it from parents or, you know, friends, or, you know, with social media, I'm sure they've heard those comments. But just, I mean, since you brought it up, I was on both sides of it, so I see it. And, you know, when I coached Columbia boys, we had a huge rivalry. I was only there 3 years, but I mean, we had some fights with Catholic on the court where the double overtime games and just a great atmosphere of rivalry. And, you know, at that point, I'm wondering what's going on. Why are they having the advantage? But, you know, depending on what you call advantage, do we have the advantage because we have success and success breeds success? Yes.
Yeah.
But am I out knocking on doors, calling people, going and following them on AAU circuit? Absolutely not. In 10 years, I haven't made one call or one, and go out and I know, Mike, I'm just answering your question, but, you know, I get frustrated because I feel like there's a difference between recruiting and having your program established and having people wanting to come to your school.
Of course,
Latter, it's the latter and not the former. And I think we get lumped in with a lot of the other bigger city schools where I think there is a lot of recruiting and going on because those people are, you know, jumping school to school year to year. But, you know, we kind of just do our thing, and, you know, I just believe people see what we do, and they believe in it, and they say, hey, my daughter wants to play basketball. Maybe she has a chance to go to Catholic and play and have a season like we just experienced. Because what we just experienced are going to be memories that these girls are never going to forget.
Yeah.
So if I have a daughter that's, like, a high school age, I mean, would I consider it? Absolutely, because I would want her to experience that.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Now, you talk a little bit about your kids who were the two I'm thinking of in particular are Bielski and Kraft, who were kind of the stars and extraordinary players. First, tell us a little bit about Mary, because Bielski, because, you know, a coach and a point guard, they have to have an ongoing thing and a connection and a relationship. So, and she was a 4-year player for you. Tell us a little bit about what people might not know about Mary.
I mean, 4-year starter. I mean, you know, it's hard to come in and break that starting. I mean, to play as a freshman at Catholic, because we do get a lot of players, and,
especially when you're 5'1".
And you're like, you know, but again, I saw her in the CYO, you know, and she was a difference maker at that level, and we just felt like, you know, she could come here and really put us, you know, take us, have that continuity from the Kiki days to now the Gillespie days, and she did that, and she did it through tenacity. I mean, that's the word that sticks out to me. I mean, right. Mary's just tenacious with everything she does. She's such a hard worker, and you know, it's not just on the court. You know, she's a super student. You know, well over 4. You know, I don't even know what the scale is at Catholic anymore. she's off the charts.
She's off the charts. That's what matters. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, all this stuff doesn't happen overnight, and all this stuff doesn't happen to people that just go through life. I mean, she grabs life and she takes it and she runs with it, and I mean, she's been a joy to coach, and you know, to see her evolve as a point guard, as a freshman point guard, given the keys, you know, to the kingdom, for, you know, for lack of better words, and saying, here you go, Mary, this is your team now for 4 years, and you know, we had our ups and downs, and we got, you know, year to year and things like that, but, you know, through it all, she got stronger, and, you know, I'm excited to see what she does next year at American.
Yeah, she's going to be a Division I college player at a great school at American U, yeah. Now, and then...
Yeah, that was her goal. Like, when she was being in ninth grade, she's like, Coach, I want to play Division I basketball, and she's like, she never wavered on that. You know, throughout the 4 years, there might have been people that were saying, you know, is that really doable? Is that really where you belong? You know, you're 5'2". Can you play at that level? And Mary never doubted herself. And, you know, through all that hard look, she can play. And like I said, I'm anxious to see how that translates at that next Division I level.
She seems like she would be one of those. I mean, there's some defensively, there's some players who are small and they're at a disadvantage because they're small. And then there's some players who can get under people because they're small and disrupt them, and she seems like that type, right?
I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, her quickness and her athleticism allows her to do that, you know, to get under them, you know, figuratively and literally, you know. I know, one of my coaches, Coach Allison Perez, she played at St. Francis, and she would always say, the worst guards were the ones that were smaller than her. Yeah. They were always like gnawing at her legs.
Right.
That's something that Mary does well, and she can really use that size and quickness against the bigger guards to her advantage.
And let's talk a little bit also about Riley, because now I don't see you guys as much as Reinhardt does, of course, but I've seen you. But to me, she was the one that in my view. Made a big leap from junior year to senior year. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but obviously she was another critical piece for you, and another really good defender, which showed up in the state final.
Yeah, Riley was, she really, between her sophomore and her junior year, worked on her three-point shot, and I think last year as a junior, she might have made like 40, 45 in that range, and that was a big jump up, and then this year she didn't rely on it as much, and she went back to her core. She still can shoot, and she made double digits, I know, in the year, maybe 15, but she didn't rely on it as much because, you know, she's such a great rim attacker, and she almost slithers through the lane. You know, you think there's nowhere for her to go, and there she is, laying it in, you know, through two or three kids. And, again, just her athleticism and versatility is, you know, as a coach, I love that, because she could guard the point guard, or she could guard a five.
That's true. Yeah.
And to have that as a defense, like, so when we're setting up our game plans and things like that, and we're going over matchups, man, to have that versatility in Riley, for her to do that on the defensive end, and then to have her, like, I mean, the other strength of that she is transition. I mean, she gets out and she runs, and, you know, she runs with the best of them. So, But yeah, they've just been great. They've been such a good pair together, and you know, they really were, you know, the heart of our team, and you know, we went as far as they took us, and here they go, they took us the whole way.
Charlie, you went into coaching pretty much right out of F&M. You were a Columbia assistant, then an F&M assistant, and then you went on and became a Columbia varsity coach and Penn Manor boys, and now at Catholic High. When did you know you wanted to get into coaching, and why?
I think it was during my time at F&M. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've always loved basketball. I mean, I just grew up with it. It's, you know, ever since Holy Trinity days back, you know, in second grade, going over there and watching my dad coach, my older brothers, and then me going through the Holy Trinity program. It was just always something that I enjoyed and loved and wanted to be an important part of my life. And then at F&M, I just took that next step of like understanding the game more. And I just remember like calling timeouts, like on the court, like Coach Robinson would allow us to do that as a player. And mm-hmm. you know, it always seemed like I was doing it at the right time. I, you know, I never called timeout and him come over and say, "What the heck are you doing?" It was, you know, just having those little things and that thing of, and then having Coach around me. I mean, and even, you know, I go back to Coach Bentley. Coach Bentley was awesome for me because he let me develop at a slower rate and let me develop at my own rate. Mm-hmm. And I think if I had someone there that might have been more pushy, and you know, he didn't really need me to be the superstar. You know, we had Whistler and Patton, mm-hmm. and I was right. could be that role player, and he allowed me to develop at my own speed, and I think that really helped me, and it helped me grow then once I got to F&M. But you know, and having Coach Robinson and all his wisdom, I mean, I still put teamwork, intensity, and poise on the board.
Wow.
You know, before every game, and you know, that's a trademark of him and Wooden. You know, he got that from Wooden, and you know, it's who we define ourselves as. So, yeah. You know, I tell him every day, you know, we go out, we play as a group, we play five as one, and you know, you're out, you're going to play as hard as anybody, I know that, but you know, you have to have that enthusiasm, the love of the game, because intensity by itself, you know, if you don't have enthusiasm with it, you're really not, you know, you're not really truly intense then. Mm-hmm. And then the poise, obviously, we've had this discussion over the last month of the season, mm-hmm. because, you know, we're down 14 at home against Township in the opening round of leagues. Mm-hmm. You know, we lose that game, you know, I don't know what happened. You know,
that's true.
You know, I don't think the rails go off, but, you know, now we start, we maybe doubt creeps in, or, you know, who knows? Mm-hmm. And thankfully, you know, we just kept our poise that game, and, you know, in that game, Riley hit a buzzer beater for us to win, and, you know, then we went in and won the league, and then led us right in the district championship win, and then, you know, now you're playing with confidence, and now you're playing like, okay, mm-hmm. we've seen it, you know, Township was a pretty good team, we're down 14, came back, you know, we're not going to be phased when Loyal Sock, who we had to lead the entire game, takes a 3-point lead with 6 minutes left, you know, mm-hmm. it just didn't phase them, mm-hmm. and that, I mean, like, there, so another, those little things and moments that you asked me about, that's the kind of stuff that, as I reflect, that I'll remember, because, I mean, that's just, those girls are going out and working teamwork, intensity, and poise to a T, and it's so fun to watch it.
For our listeners, that teamwork, intensity, poise, that was on Glenn Robinson's ancient blackboard that was in the corner of Mazur Gym for, what, 40 years, I guess. So that was literally a cornerstone of their program forever. And I wonder, speaking of, you know, legendary coaches, Charlie, you follow Lamar Kaufman, who, of course, had great success at Lancaster Catholic. What was that like for you? I mean, a lot of people don't want to be the guy that follows the guy, but how was that for you?
I think it was a little bit easier because I knew Lamar, I knew his son, John, mm-hmm. and, you know, Lamar, them being from Columbia, you know, it just, I think, like, me not knowing them might have made it a little more difficult, mm-hmm. but, you know, knowing them and kind of having their support from day one mm-hmm. made it, like, easier for me, and knowing that they had my back, you know, and we'll go out, I could go out there and be myself and not try to be like Lamar or Lamar Jr. I wanted to, you know, be my own coach, be my own person. Even though we both obviously are known for our defense and our presses, man, they couldn't be more different, you know. Mm. His were not all, but a lot of his were you know, zone traps and things like that, and a lot of my stuff is based on man-to-man, and, and you know, even though we do some of the zone stuff, it's not nearly as much as Coach Kaufman did.
By the way, we township coached by Devon Pinkard, who has been a guest on our show.
Indeed, that's right. I forgot
another
about
after
that.
The buzzer connection there.
Indeed.
Charlie, you and I talked about this a little bit up at Hershey, but this is something that is endlessly interesting to me: is the difference between coaching boys and girls, and the way girls interact with each other and the way boys do is so different. You've done both. You're one of those guys that has done both a substantial amount. So tell us a little bit about the differences there, the difference between those two things.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is you got to remember that at the end of the day, we're both the boys and the girls. It's still they're playing basketball, you know. And I like to think of it that way, that you know the sport's the same. But there are some nuances and some differences. And for me, the biggest difference between the girls and the boys are the girls listen intently and will go out and try to do exactly as you say. And not saying the boys are disrespectful or anything like that, but, you know, I was one of them. And I know I felt like, okay, I don't need coach tell me what to do. I know what I'm doing, even though I was always respectful to my coaches. It was just one of those things. And I think with girls, the attention to the detail and the fact that they want to go out there and they want to work hard and they want to, you know, do what you ask them to do. And, you know, they do it with in a manner that is they want to please you. They want you to be happy with them. And, you know, that wasn't always the case with the boys. The boys
that's
were
funny.
Like, get out of my way. I know what I'm doing. We hear you. my 7 years that I coached the boys, I had great kids. I mean, you know, you go back and you look at some of the kids and, like, they're not kids anymore. They're men. But it's funny. They, you know, I see some of the Columbia kids. You know, I was maybe 10 years older than them, but I still see them and, you know, they still call me coach. So that makes me feel pretty good that, you know, I made that difference. And that's ultimately what I'm trying to do. You know, I love the game. I love the strategy. I just love being around the young people. But at the end of the day, I'm just trying to make that difference. And it was funny, I had a JV player for my Columbia days reach out to me on the way. I was on the bus on the way to the state game and said, Coach, I haven't talked to him in probably 20 years. Like, I mean, he's a couple years younger than my youngest brother, so he probably got my number from him. But reached out and he's like, I don't think I ever thanked you, but, you know, your discipline really, you know, got me started in my life and in my career in the military.
Oh, that's awesome, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the stuff that happens, and people don't see it or hear it, and they don't need to hear it or see it, but it's if as a coach, like, when you start doubting yourself and, like, okay, when's the time to hang it up, and it's like, you get these messages, and, you know, then you know that, you know, you made a difference.
That's pretty cool. So, obviously, you're not looking to hang it up now. Do you see yourself doing this for the long, long haul? Do you see another vista in coaching, let's say? What are you thinking about when you think about your future?
I kind of look at it, you know, year by year. Both my son's a junior in high school, so he'll be a senior next year. My daughter will be a senior in college. My kids are kind of out of the house. So I don't know. My wife probably likes the freedom that she has during basketball season. Me not always around. Just I think, you know, I've been struggling with some back problems, and I want to really get that taken care of before, like, I really figure out what's going on. But, you know, I'm already looking at next year's schedule. You know, I call Spring Force coach. We're texting, trying to get a tip-off tournament together. Oh, you know, okay. So it's already, you know, already looking at it and getting involved. So, you know, definitely see myself next year. But, you know, like I said, it's kind of 1 year at a time. And I think if I get healthy and I feel good, because this year has been the worst as far as for me from a pain. Like, I've always had minor back problems, but nothing like this year.
Wow.
It was pretty painful on the sideline. So, you know, hopefully have an appointment here next in middle of April, get some things checked out, get some
advice
on what to do. But, you know, I think if I get that fixed and I start feeling better, you know, then I could see a longer term.
What are the doctors telling you right now? What's the issue?
Well, it's the, I mean, I had the MRI, so it's, there's, I think it's the L2 and 3 or 3 and 4 are compressed, and then there's some stuff that's laying on the nerves that are really shooting the pain down my left leg.
Ooh.
So it's like, I mean, sometimes the pain is like excruciating. I like haven't had pain like that, and
it's
constant. Like, it's in the past, I could, it would be there, but it'd be like at a 2. Now it's like living at the level 8, and it's just
never
releases. Yeah,
that doesn't sound great.
I mean, I don't know if you noticed, I sat down a lot more this year than I ever.
I did notice that. Yeah, I remember that. Even when we were trying to talk, I noticed that a couple times. Yeah.
Charlie, off the beaten path, it was curious to me. I just did a story about Lancaster Catholic 73-74 girls team and how they pressed and how that's kind of become the thing, as you just mentioned before. I wonder why that is. I mean, why other teams don't play the same way.
That is an excellent question, and I've asked my assistants that for the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. I really have. I'm like, now I do see more teams, even in our local, you know, league, you know, not as many as I would expect it, but mm-hmm. I do see more teams going full court. I think Ephrata did a really good job this year, and I think they started to, you know, employ more full court pressing and things like that. Look, I always tell my girls, it's not necessarily about getting steals or turnovers. You know, that's awesome, and that's kind of the benefits, but wearing them down, you know, just wear the other team down, and that's what we believe. We believe we're going to be in better shape conditioning. We believe we're going to go deeper. So if I can wear you down, you know, you mentally, you get fatigued, maybe you'll make mistakes in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
We all know if you get tired, your shot's the first thing to go.
Mm-hmm.
So now, you know, so that's my big belief. That's why I think some of the differences between Coach Kaufman and my pressing, I think, you know, his led more to the steals and the turnovers, where, you know, we still get plenty of them, but it's not probably as many as Coach Kaufman did. But ultimately, we're in your face, and we're wearing, you know, definitely the primary ball handler, and we're trying to get to the second and third ball handlers too.
Interesting. That I was going through the games that team played 50 years ago, and they had a game in the state playoffs where they forced, it was either 47 or 49 turnovers. So there's the bar you need to shoot for.
I read that article. I was like, that was a good article, by the way.
Right.
I thought it was well written. But thanks. When I read that, I was like, 47 turnovers.
Doesn't even seem possible.
I don't think you get that many possessions.
Yeah.
How did they score like 20 points?
Yeah. And the other one that got me was they won a game where they shot 15 for 79. Or no, 12 for 79. That was that.
That's not going to get it done.
No, but it did. That's the thing.
Normally, it's not going to get it done. Yeah. Wow.
All right. Hey.
Possessions in a high school game.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Charlie. Hey, we appreciate it.
Yes,
man.
We do.
Thanks so much. Get your back fixed and coach another, I don't know, another 10 or so state titles, right?
That's great. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks.
Appreciate it.
Be well, Charlie.
See you later.
Take care.
Bye.
Charlie Dett's one of the good guys, and I can remember him back to his Columbia days when he was sporting the rec specs.
Wow!
I think he played as a freshman at Columbia. I think, you know, as he mentioned, with Will Patton and Mike Whistler, some really good teams, and he was using the rec specs back then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But and then he was on some really good teams at F&M and had a really nice career. He's like a 2-time honorable mention All-American at F&M, playing the post for them. So, you know, he had a really very respectable career, all, you know, playing career and now a great coaching career. So good for him.
Yeah, it's really worked out great, and they really did have a great group here this was kind of a culmination. It was a 4-year group,
and
it was a culmination. Now, they didn't all, there weren't only those two that we were talking about, Bolesky and Kraft, were varsity contributors all 4 years, but
yeah,
still it's a project, and you got to be all you. It's a big commitment.
Yeah,
it's a big commitment.
This just put this in my memory. A shout out to Chris Knight. He takes great photos all the time, but one of the ones I really liked was when he showed all the girls on the bench celebrating one of their teammates' success.
Yeah,
that was a good one. That was a good one. He doesn't take bad ones, but that one really drew me in. And the other one is Jason Guarente wrote about two of the, I don't want to say lesser lights, but two of the girls who aren't as featured as Riley and Mary are. And that was really well done too, just giving a real sense of the entire operation, which, you know, you and I have both covered teams like this over the years, and it is kind of interesting to really get into the nitty gritty and really get familiarize yourself game after game as this goes along. Yeah, and then those were two examples of really great
work. I remember when I was hanging out with the Lebanon Catholic coaches. This is years ago, back when I was still playing basketball a lot and stuff. Right. And they would marvel at, of course, Patty Howard was a great coach who won a couple of state championships and a gazillion district titles there. But they would marvel at how they would, you know, Patty would say something like, "Okay, now you catch it at the elbow, and then you turn around and you pivot on your left foot, and then you ball fake, and then you bounce pass," and then the kids would do it like they're reciting lines in a play. Just how well they listen, and then the other thing is how girls, how their natural instinct is to make it a family. Mm-hmm. In a way that is not true of boys.
I think that's true.
If you talk to good female athletes about their recruiting, like a good high school player who's been recruited, they will invariably say, "Well, when I went there, right away I felt like the other girls. I felt like I was in a family." You know,
that matters.
It matters more to girls.
I think that's true, I don't know why that is. I mean, I don't know if it's an ego thing with guys or whatever. Like, you know,
I think that's part of it. I remember years ago, I just thought of this. The guy who was the women's soccer coach at North Carolina was a guy. Women's soccer, and they won. They were like UCLA.
Mia Hamm was there, right? Yeah, they were great.
Yeah, they were unbelievable.
Yeah.
And one time, he recruited this freshman who was like, she was a striker, and she was very aggressive and tough, and she scored all these goals early in the intra-squad stuff and then early in the season. And one day, he's sitting in his office, and the veterans on the team knock on the door, and they come in and they say, "What are you going to do about Katie?" And he's like, "I don't know. How about clone her?" "Wait, is that what you were thinking along those lines? Clone her?" And she was, her aggressiveness and her storming in there and taking this role was busting up the family a little bit.
Interesting.
You know,
Well, we've talked about this 100 times, just about the endless fascination of how the pieces fit together and how much that means in basketball in particular.
Because there's only five, in basketball, I think more than any other sport.
Yeah, because there's only five out there, and it's like, how is everybody else going to work on the periphery of that main orbit there? So it is fascinating, and I'm happy for Charlie because I remember going. Seeing him play, and he always seemed like kind of a quiet guy. But obviously, that's that's been left behind, and now he's obviously
he's not a real boisterous guy, but he's not like he was as a kid. That's for sure. And so, most of us aren't.
Yeah. So good for him. Yeah, I'm happy for Charlie. You know, it's again the footnotes is he's in the Halls of Fame at FNM and Columbia.
He might be a candidate, and I suggested this in my column for the Lancaster County Basketball Mount Rushmore.
Ooh,
there is
an interesting discussion.
Yes,
because don't you have to divide it between boys and girls? Because Lamar is clearly on there, right?
Well, Lamar, how about if we're including players? I mean, would Wally Walker be on there?
Yeah, I would think he has.
Yeah,
to.
Sure.
Jack Hurd, Mike Hurd. Whistler.
This is
an interesting discussion because it's almost like you have to differentiate boys, girls, players, coaches.
Yeah,
don't
that's
you?
Right. That's right.
There's got to be four of them.
But Charlie's kind of both. Charlie's kind of the Dawn Staley of
that's fair.
of the Mount Rushmore. You know?
So yeah, that's an interesting thought, Mike. I mean, if you're picking like the Mount Rushmore, let's just go with boys coaches. Doesn't Dave Althaus have to be on there with all the success he had at Warwick?
If we're going with boys coaches, I mean, if we're just talking overall basketball,
right?
I think the first guy on the list is Glenn.
Are we talking LL now, or are we talking?
No, just basketball. Just basketball.
Lancaster
the
County
sport of basketball.
Lancaster County basketball.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's fair. I don't disagree with that. And I don't know where I would go after that. Dave has got to be there because that guy was
quite a run he had.
He did. But you know, Charlie's in the discussion though for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, Warren Goodling is in the discussion, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, he only had one losing season in 25 years. Yeah. That's, to me, that's damn impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. He never had a bad team. Some of his teams did not do what they thought they would do in March.
Right.
I think that's fair. But I can't fault him for that. I mean, no. I thought his. And he's still out there, man.
Oh my God, that was the best thing when we talked to him from the Tampa airport a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah,
because
he's
playing at 71.
Yeah.
I love that. Still he's my hero.
And he's still doing games. He's still, he was up there at the state finals the whole weekend. He was after with a couple beverages afterwards the one night. He went,
He's died in the wool, man. It's funny because I was talking to his longtime assistant, Dave Brown, who is still an assistant for Danny Walk. Speaking of guys who might belong on the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the thing about how Warren only had one losing season. And Dave said, the one year we did have a losing season, we came into last game 500 and we lost. You know, just showing how these things stick with these guys.
Oh, yeah. And God, think about how long he's been doing it. If you count playing, Dave Brown, I mean, as a player and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And here's another example of that. I'm working on this story about guys being in the zone. And in the course of doing that, there's a guy named Jeff Horst who played guard at Lancaster Monday. They played in a great league championship game against CV. They lost 84-82. He had a shot at the end potentially to win it. He had a great game.
Yeah.
He wasn't a big scorer normally, but he had a great game in the league final. And so I talked to Jeff Groffin, who was the coach of that team, and he was talking about, that rim was too loose because all the intramural players like hanging on it. So of course I said to Groff, I said, oh, not that this sticks with you 33 years after the
fight. I know. That's amazing.
That really just amused me. So the rim was so loose, we just didn't get a bounce. And it's like it was a great, it might have been one, it's in the top five league championship games ever. 84-82?
I don't really remember that. I don't know where I was then, but I don't remember that game. I know that it happened, but I don't really
Jones had a great game for Stevie. He had like 30 because
I might have still been at the Patriots.
You might have been.
Yeah.
I mean, this kid, Jeff Horst, he was not a big scorer, and he just went off. He had like 19 points, and he had a look at a three at the end to win it, and it bounced off the rim. They lose. So, great
Jeff,
game.
Jeff Groff is another basketball
guy.
Big-time basketball guy. Yeah.
Yes. And
a terrific coach.
Yeah, they were always good.
Underrated coach. Yeah.
And it was always funny to watch them play because they had this one sideline inbounds play. And if somebody didn't do their homework and didn't scout them, they scored on it every time. I swear to God, if you didn't do your homework, they were going to score on this play.
And a sideline, not even the baseline.
Yeah, to start a quarter or a half or whatever. It's like they scored on it every time if you didn't do your homework. Everybody knew it. Everybody knew what you had to do. They would get a layup out of it every time.
Wow. I like it.
Speaking of the state finals, you in fact covered all the state finals.
Oh, what was your takeaway? A lot of basketball, a lot of hoops.
And one of the things you wrote was how for years Philadelphia had all the basketball factories, and now that might be flipping, whereas Pittsburgh is now part of that.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things about it is that the Philadelphia Catholic League. That's almost like the SEC in football, you know.
Fair.
And they obviously they don't make any bones about the fact that they're recruiting and they're bringing in transfers all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And winning the Philadelphia Catholic League is more important to them than winning the state championship.
Yeah, that's fair.
So the PIAA has this rule that if you transfer after your sophomore year, you're not eligible for the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
So they put their roster together knowing that they're not going to be the same team in the state playoffs that they were the rest of the year.
Isn't that crazy?
And Parkland from Allentown in class, the big schools, class 6A, beat both Roman Catholic and Archbishop Wood in the state playoffs. On the other half of the bracket, which Central York came all the way through and won the whole thing, was a much different animal. I mean, Parkland had a much tougher road, but Central York, I thought, was the better team. That was an excellent game. 6A boys was a terrific game.
Yeah, I was impressed. And that's the first state title in Central York history, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, that's damn impressive.
Yeah, and they should be good again next year because they got some studs. They really have a lot of talent. Mm-hmm. But anyway, these Pittsburgh teams we were talking about, one of them is called Imani Christian. They're Class A, which is the smallest class.
Okay.
And so it's a tiny little school. They've been controversial. The guys are in and out. They had a guy last year, 6'10" sophomore, who had an offer from Kansas, and he's gone. He's out of the picture. And then they had another kid who is a junior now, who as a freshman was on Bishop Canavan, which is a Catholic school in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And they won the state championship. They won the state Class A championship. Almost immediately afterwards, he announced that I'm transferring because there's a lack of inclusion in this school, and I feel discriminated against. I'm not comfortable. So,
interesting.
Bishop Canavan contested the transfer. Mm. I think partly because, hey, you're really dumping on our school here.
Yeah. Right?
And we don't. The WPIAL, the Western Administrative Body, ruled him ineligible. So ruled in favor of Bishop Canavan, or I guess you'd say.
Mm-hmm.
PIAA overturned it. They appealed to the PIAA and he overturned it. And this guy had went for like 34 in the state final. Both of their guards, both juniors, both have offers from Fordham. Mm. And they're just little dudes. They're not...
It just needed.
It reminds me of a story, but anyway. So, the other thing that's interesting to me about it, and the other school is Lincoln Park,
yes,
which is a performing arts charter school in the Pittsburgh area.
Of course.
And they are, I'm telling you, they are freakishly talented. They have a kid who is being recruited by everybody. He's a junior, about a 6'5 junior. He actually kind of played point guard this year. But then they have another kid who's going to Pitt, about a 6'4 more of a shooting guard. He had 37 in the state final, 14 of 18 from the field, 7 of 8 from the three.
Shit.
I mean, he lit it up.
That's balling.
Yeah, they're very, very talented. This is their third state title now. They've had to move up in class because of this success formula thing. So anyway, they were very impressive, and their game was their state final was not competitive at all. There weren't a lot of great games. I mean, 12 games, maybe two or three of them you would say were really competitive.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a little disappointing. But,
right.
But yeah, so it's and now this coaches that get in this situation, they get blamed for recruiting. Now Lincoln Park is getting a lot of criticism, and so is Imani Christian, and that's just...
Where's Lincoln Park again?
Near Pittsburgh.
It is. Okay.
Yeah, it's near Pittsburgh. And Imani is in Pittsburgh.
So the axis is, as you wrote, the axis is kind of shifting.
Maybe it is. Although it looked at this at the point of the year where like the Catholic League playoffs, the Philly Catholic League, I mean, that league looked monstrous this year. It didn't quite play out, but in Class 3A, Devon Prep, which finished 8th in the Catholic League, and when entered the state playoffs with a 10-13 record, won the state championship. So
maybe that would be an argument, a counter argument to your argument, would it not?
Yeah, right. And one of the things that we were talking about again, sort of after the game when we went out for a beer and we're talking about this stuff. One of the things we were saying is there's a couple teams in the Catholic League, St. Joe's Prep and Father Judge, who have really, next year they're going to be really good. They had good groups this year. Next year they're going to be really good. Could probably contend for the Catholic League and the state title with what they have.
Mm-hmm.
So do they take transfers? Do they take transfers and kind of gut their opportunity to win?
Mm,
compromise their opportunity to win a state title in order to win a Catholic League title.
I mean, it kind of gets back to your argument before. Do they what do they value?
Yeah.
You know, what part of the schedule do they value?
I mean, there's no doubt they value the Catholic League more. 9,000 people in the Palestra, that's a big deal.
It's something I said for that.
But to be able to do both, have a shot at both, I don't know.
That's a curious thing.
So here we are.
But anything else stand out to you about your those are some long days up there in Hershey.
It is a long day, but it's sort of like a culmination. I like high school basketball.
Yeah, I enjoy it.
And I look forward to that weekend every year. It's so like a lot of things in our business. You're really looking forward to it, and you're kind of glad it's over when it's over. You know, it's both. It's both. There's a lot of things like that.
So we also wanted to talk about the Sixers and how they kind of got hosed last night in their game against the Clippers. I mean, it was the James Harden homecoming, but that really kind of took a back seat to what happened at the end of the game.
Yeah, that ended up not being such a big deal, yeah.
So, but the Sixers seemingly had control until the last couple minutes, and then some things, some whistles went against them, most notably on the last play of the game, where it certainly looked like Kelly Oubre got fouled. And it went uncalled, and then the pool reporter went and interviewed the referees, and they said they thought that, I don't remember who the defender was, I think it might have been Paul George, had verticality, but it clearly, then they realized when they looked at the replay, he clearly did not, and then the official admitted they should have called a foul. Yeah. And there was another call about possession, but that one at the end was the most egregious one from my point of view.
Yeah. I thought the out of the who touched it last thing. Yeah. I thought that was egregious just because they watched the replay interminably and then had to overturn it to get it wrong.
Yeah.
That was an outrage. But the Sixers really should have won that game. I mean, there was a play where Tyrese Maxey
fell over for no reason.
Was going to get the ball in the backcourt. He was by himself. Nobody was near him. And he just lost his balance and slipped. And
it led to an easy one. So
the
Sixers, as we sit here today, they have 9 games left. They're 39-34. They are tied for 9th with the Bulls. No, excuse me. They're 8th. I'm not reading correctly. They're 8th. So they're in the play-in tournament, which can be messy, but I mean, it can be far less messy if Joel Embiid does come back and it is a reasonable facsimile of himself. Because I think with him, I think their team makes a lot of sense. Yeah. They have a lot of guys who can do a lot of things. I mean, Maxey's had a great year. Buddy Hield has helped since they acquired him. Nicholas Batum is a helpful guy. I mean, Tobias Harris, you don't know what you're going to get out of him. I get that. But, I mean, there's a lot of guys. I mean, Cameron Payne has actually played pretty well for them since they got him. So that I think they have the right pieces to around this, an Embiid-centered team. But the question is, what will Embiid be when he comes back?
Yeah, that's right. He's not only got to come back, but be himself. If he comes back and he's himself, they might have a pretty good underdog vibe.
Yeah.
Who knows? I think they kind of do.
Yeah.
But if not, it doesn't matter. But that would have been such a nice win to get because, as you said, you want to avoid as much of the play-in stuff as you can.
Yeah.
And I also think that the league is deeper than it's been for a while. In teams that, even if they have no chance to win the championship, you're going to have to bust it to beat them in a 7-game series.
I think so.
I think the Bulls might even be that now. Didn't they kill somebody last night? They hammered somebody good last night, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, let me look at that. But right now, the Celtics are 11 games clear.
Yeah.
So they're 57-15. That ain't bad.
And you don't want to play them in the first round, obviously.
No.
They're really, really good, and they're clearly the best team. I think right now Milwaukee's probably the second best team
the Knicks are pretty good. Brunson is great, and they got some other guys who can do some things. And the Magic has actually had a pretty good year. They're 42-30. I mean, and they have some guys.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, they have some guys.
That's one of the teams that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It would not be easy to take them out in a series.
I don't think so.
But they're not gonna win it this year.
They're not gonna win it.
They're gonna win the whole thing this year, but there's a lot of teams like that in the league, I think. I would put somebody like Dallas. I really don't think Dallas can win it. The Pacers are okay. New Orleans.
They're not bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think the league is, again, a little deeper in the sort of the middle tiers.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and even the Heat, of course, they are always kind of the good sleeper team. They're 39, so they're a half game ahead of the Sixers, so they would be
in
the play.
I can't believe that. I can believe it because it seems like the Sixers, since Embiid got hurt, it seems like the Sixers are like 3-24 or something.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. And out west, Denver only has a half game lead over Chris Finch's Minnesota Timberwolves and the Oklahoma City Thunder. So
yeah, the Oklahoma City actually lost a couple. I think Minnesota was third as of like 5 days ago. Yeah. Although it's just percentage points.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have Karl Anthony Towns right now, but Anthony Edwards is kind of really, emerged as like that guy, he's every night he has like a highlight play,
And the Joe Bear thing has worked out okay for them.
I thought that was a terrible move when they acquired him.
So did a lot of people.
But it does underscore Chris is a pretty good coach and he does know how to, he had DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis when he was an assistant and kind of their offensive coordinator in New Orleans. So you would think that maybe he had an idea about how that worked, and it has worked out really well for them. And it's like the quote he had, what was he saying? He said to Towns, it's like, you're not the centerpiece anymore. Like, Anthony's kind of the sun and kind of have to orbit around him. And apparently that did not fall on deaf ears because before he got hurt, Towns was having a good year too.
Yeah, he was. I think he's bought into that. And they're pretty good defensively when they're healthy.
So I don't know what the deal is with Towns when he comes back or not. But, I think they'll be a tough out. But Denver, I would think.
Denver, to me, is still the favorite.
Yeah,
because of that guy.
Yeah,
that guy.
They do. And I would love to see a Denver-Boston final. I think that would be really good.
Yeah.
I think that would be really good.
So, the league is a lot of good players and a lot of good teams, I think. The Sixers, I don't know where they fit in. But if Embiid is, he's got to be back and he's got to be Embiid.
Yeah. And this is, we've had this discussion before with them in the postseason where it never seems like Embiid is like, completely 100%, let's go get him.
Yeah.
It always seems like something is hanging over. Like the one year when he had a broken face, for God's sake. He's wearing like that Phantom of the Opera mask.
He broke his face. Come on. That's right. That was a Phantom of the Opera-esque mask.
Yeah, so and it always seems like it's something, like his knees or his back or his face or whatever. But it never seems like we're, Embiid's really going in guns blazing postseason every year. And it's a shame because he is a great player. There's no denying that.
Oh, my goodness.
He's in the top five of the best players in the league, in my mind, always.
And he might be top five all time in terms of how easy is it for him to score.
Yeah.
How prolific is he?
And it does look easy.
How hard is it to stop him from scoring?
It does look easy for him at times.
And points per minute played, he's one of the best in the history of the game.
I really liked how somebody introduced that metric earlier this season, and it's just like, I never even really thought of it in those terms,
It's amazing.
So, it would be interesting to see him at his best, but I'm not sure if we're going to get that again.
Yeah, and that's somewhat, that's kind of the dark side of the moon of that statistic.
Yeah.
Of the points per minute played,
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't play as much minutes as he'd like a guy to get to play.
Never does, it seems. Well, anyway, I think we've reached the end of our
journey.
We've
done it again, my friend.
We have.
Thanks to Charlie, one of the good guys.
He is, no doubt.
Two-time state champion now as a coach. And
that'll get it done.
It's entirely possible there could be more because they're never going to be not pretty good. I shouldn't say that. It's sports, but it's hard to imagine.
I agree. So
absolutely.
We're happy for Charlie, though, for sure.
All right, that's it, big guy.
Okay.
We'll do it again soon, gang. This has been After the Buzzer. He is Gordy. I am Mike. See ya.
See you later.